Tammy Wallensack, certified divorce lending professional and senior mortgage loan originator at Oak Leaf Community Mortgage. Welcome to Lunch and a Divorce Lawyer, Tammy.
Thanks for having me, Peter. I appreciate it.
It's a mouthful.
You did well.
Well, thank you. Senior mortgage loan originator. Yeah. How about this, by way to just tee you up and get you talking, Tammy? What do you do? I kind of understand what a mortgage loan officer is, but then really track back a little. Give us a little bit of your journey and kind of how you got into sort of where you are today. Give us a little, little Tammy history, would you?
I appreciate that. Yeah. I've been in the mortgage business way too long to actually put a number on it. I don't like to say it out loud, but through my career, I've had a lot of positions. I was in a wholesale capacity for years. And then I realized it was kind of a thankless position. I didn't feel like I was truly helping people. And then I was like, you know, I could probably originate. I could probably work direct with the consumer and feel that it was a much more fulfilling position for me and what I was going through. And then I personally went through a divorce and realized that there was a big disconnect between mortgage lending and the divorce world, family law. And so I was like, this could be fixed. This gap could kind of be fixed. And being in loan origination and working direct with the consumer, I wanted to be able to be a help to people in a consultative role. And so I realized that I could help a lot of people that were going through the divorce, making better sense of their situation prior to signing their settlement agreement. Like if I could get to them at the very beginning of the stage, if there's a marital home involved or if they're trying to buy a house, then I could truly be a consultant for them and truly be a benefit. And that's where I really dug in, was like, okay, I understand the mortgage business, but I need to understand family law. I need to understand that process. And that's where certified divorce lending professional comes in, and understanding that, that process, your world and what that looks like, and where I could truly be a fit and a benefit, and understanding the language that you use and some of the things that I could help the client understand and make a better, more informed decision regarding their marital home. So that's really where I was like, oh, this could be a real passion for me. So that's the direction I went.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of people getting mortgage, right? That's a big circle, right? How many people got a mortgage in 2022, Tammy? Do you know that answer?
Oh my gosh. I don't know, but
we didn't prep for that one. I'm just thinking, right? It's a huge circle.
It's a huge number. Yeah. Especially since the pandemic, right? There, with rates being unprecedented. I mean, we talked a little bit about that. I mean, rates were so low that it was almost a detriment if you didn't participate in that, to get a really low interest rate and to be able to really truly afford and build wealth based on real estate. So lots of people got mortgages for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, to me, the idea of like, how do you create your niche within all that noise must be difficult. I don't know. When I watch the golf tournaments, you just get all these damn ads for Rocket Mortgage. So,
well, that's, there's a lot of things of obviously with the internet and stuff, and people can Google and look at interest rates and do other things, but can they truly have somebody that's by their side as a consultant and not being, just an algorithm or a number that's put into a system. And that's where I knew there was a huge, area for my expertise and being able to, there's so much going on in divorce anyways with emotion and that type of thing. I mean, they really do need somebody that can help guide them through that process.
Yeah, for sure. I know at our firm, we always talk about, right? Like the most important part of a case, just one person's opinion, really is kind of like the frequency of communication. And I would think, you know, whatever word you want to use, somebody who's by their side or communicating a lot or kind of, and I think what you even spoke about, even really personally knowing what they've gone through, yeah. I mean, is huge versus just, you know, Goliath big bank or whatever, right? They don't.
Right. And a lot of times if they were to go to just a typical lender, the lender would say, call me when your divorce is final and I'll look at your settlement agreement. I mean, they're not giving them the direction and the option. I mean, I truly work with the divorce team, so I can set them up. I can talk to you, Peter, and say, look, if the maintenance or something is structured this way rather than this way, then it could mean this specific situation and accomplishing for them what they're looking to accomplish for both spouses, right? I mean, both spouses need have certain wants and needs post-divorce. They have lives post-divorce. Yep. So making sure that those things are accomplished before they ink the settlement agreement. Once it's inked and done and stamped by the judge, it's pretty much done. I mean, you could go back, right, and fight some things, but there's a lot of things that are just already done.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most, you know, generic rule would be property settlements really final and generally not modifiable post judgment. You know, some things are, but hey, what's just a quick nugget though? A certified divorce lending professional, what does that mean?
So a certified divorce lending professional, I like to say, is I understand the process of divorce and I just happen to be able to do a mortgage loan. So if there's a transaction at the end of the day, then I would just hope to be considered for it, really, because typically what's happening is if you're going through a settlement and there is a marital home, you can do a couple of things. One person can sell the home, you know, both the couple can sell the home, right? And they can split the proceeds, or one person wants to keep the home. And what does that look like? And how does that work? How does somebody keep that marital home when one person is going to leave the home? So I help them establish all those options and making sense of what that looks like. And sometimes when I do that and spell it out and it's in black and white in front of them, they're like, oh, that's really not really what I wanted to do.
Right.
So I help them make a divorce mortgage plan and come up with their options so they can make a better informed decision.
For sure. No, I like your description there, even though it just, you know, the mortgage process and the divorce process. I think that was it, but
yeah,
you said it, you said it better. I wasn't really expecting you to know total number of mortgages funded in 2022, but is there,
Google it.
Like, are there many, how many, I only know one other at a personal level, certified divorce lending professional. How many of those are around? I mean, how many,
you know,
in Chicagoland, do you run into a bunch or?
Not a bunch. I mean, we are scattered around the country. I have a very, so the certification itself has been around 10 years and
10 years.
The founder of that organization used to be an originator here in Chicagoland. And she built her business around working with divorce attorneys and financial advisors and really understood that process herself. And so there's a certified divorce financial analyst, which a lot of you might know that that certification, Peter. You might work with CDFAs and CDLPs. We're getting to be more recognized as being a very integral part of the divorce process, and somebody that should be brought into the team, just like a certified divorce financial analyst would help with the division of assets and making sense of what really needs to be kept and divided and all that kind of stuff, for tax purposes and for, you know, future earnings. And one asset doesn't necessarily equate to another, like equity in a home of 500,000 doesn't necessarily equate to an IRA that's worth $500,000. Those are two different assets. So a CDLP would be just around the marital home. We would make decisions and stay in our lane of what those options are. We don't practice law. We're not CPAs, and we don't give tax advice, right? So
yeah. As I've gotten to know people in the, what would we say, the association, is that what you are?
Yeah,
I've been so impressed with the nuanced information, right? As somebody who, right, I mean, you're always learning and growing. I don't have a problem saying there are things I've been ignorant of, and it's great to learn and improve myself, right? And
yeah,
you know, I have a couple longtime friends or colleagues in the divorce or in the mortgage space who I'm comfortable referring to. But I think other than a couple handful of people, I would always look to people like yourself, sort of CDLPs, because, and that's the biggest reason. It's because how much I have literally learned from you and a couple of your colleagues about divorce lending that probably 2-3 years prior, I was ignorant on, admittedly.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it is an educational process for attorneys as well. And we try to help attorneys understand we're just a part of your divorce team. They're not going to rely on you. They're not going to come, your client isn't going to come to you and say, can I refinance the house into my name alone and do an equity buyout? You're going to be like, I don't know, you know, can you? So if you have a divorce team, it's going to make for a much better settlement agreement for you, right? Because you're going to be able to put things in the settlement that you know can be carried out. And when it comes to their biggest asset, a lot of times the home is their biggest asset. You want to make sure that all the options have been looked at and that they're making a good agreement with their spouse.
So Tammy, you gave me some bullets, and we're going to have a little discussion about them. Okay. And, you know, help some listeners out who might be considering divorce, going through a divorce, or, you know, need a mortgage.
Sure.
So tell me about this timing discussion, 'cause I think you've already teed that up even a little bit.
Yeah.
I think what you said 5 minutes-ish ago was something like you call Rocket Mortgage, or here, we're going to just be critical of Rocket. Even I shouldn't even say that. You call Big Brother, Big Brother, and they're going to say, call me when your divorce is finalized. Is that good advice? And if it isn't, what's better advice? We're talking about this track of Bill and Linda Smith are going through a divorce, and let's just say Linda wants to keep the home and refinance the mortgage.
Yeah.
Let's start there. Let's talk about that timing then, Tammy, because I don't think it is the best idea to call Big Brother when the case is over, is it?
No, it's a terrible advice. And that's really where I realized that my services could really be utilized, as I was getting a lot of settlement agreements from people, and they were super excited, like, yay, I get to keep the house. It was like a win for them. But then when I truly dug in and looked at the situation, all the pieces weren't in alignment with mortgage guidelines for them to be able to carry that out. And they were very upset, because a lot of times, as you know, in the settlement, it says you have X amount of time in order to refinance the mortgage. And if that doesn't happen, then the marital home will be listed and sold. And so you're putting that in an agreement, thinking that you can carry this out. Now, all of a sudden, you cannot do this. And now you're going to have to sell your home, you know, based on a court order. So if I can come in prior to that and look at the pieces, and we can kind of do some projections and say, okay, what does the maintenance schedule look like? If there's maintenance, if there's child support, alimony, maintenance, any kind of support, Right. Or another situation that might come up is maybe one of the spouses has not been in the workforce and maybe they're just rejoining the workforce and they haven't had a job, or maybe they're working part-time. Can I utilize that income as part of the income to qualify? Maybe, maybe not, but that needs to be looked at. We need to look at all the pieces. We need to look at credit history. We need to look at how long in a maintenance or alimony situation, if you're utilizing that or child support, there's a certain amount of time that you have to receive it and a certain amount of time that it has to continue in order for me as a mortgage lender to be able to even use it as income. So that's where timing comes in. So you can't put in the settlement agreement, Linda Smith will refinance the house within 90 days or else the home will be listed in the event that she's receiving, let's say, maintenance to qualify for the mortgage. She needs to have that for 6 months before she can, before I can actually use it as qualified income for her. That's a really
Is that the 636 rule?
That's exactly what it is, Peter. Great job.
Hey, I told you 3 years ago, I might not have known that, but I'm a learner, Tammy.
You're a learner. You're like a sponge. Yeah, so it has to be received for 6 months and it has to have a 3-year continuance. So a situation that I had come up, a woman brought me her settlement agreement. She was getting a hefty amount of maintenance. Right. For 3 years, but she came to me after she'd been sitting on receiving this maintenance for 12 months. So she came to me and wanted to purchase a home thinking I have this amount of money coming in every month. And I looked at her settlement agreement. She only had 2 more years left on that, of those payments coming to her. I could not use any of her income, zero. So if I had spoken to her prior to them signing, I could have said, okay, if you want to wait a year, you might have to consider taking less and stretching it out.
Right.
Or looking at some ways to do take the lump sum distributions that she was receiving and creating some type of an income stream for her. So there's a lot of options if we do it before it's all in writing in a settlement agreement.
Yeah. No, I was almost, just as we were talking, I was, the 6 months I definitely had learned, because I used to make that mistake as you were describing, kind of like, right, sell and refi in 90 days or something.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I even, that had dropped out of my head, the 36 months on the duration.
Yeah.
That seems like an easy, is that on both spousal support or maintenance, or strike that, child support or spousal support?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the type of loan. There's other programs out there that'll allow for less of receipt, but most of them are 36 month continuance in order to use them. So the 636 rule is a very good rule for to kind of work through, but then you have to consider the timing too. So if you're going to receive, you need somewhat of a buffer. Otherwise, you're going to pigeonhole yourself into, okay, I've received it for 6 months. I have exactly 36 months left. That means I have to do it and close. It's 36 months post the closing of the transaction. So if I'm going to close the loan, let's say in January, I need it good for 36 more months.
Right. So really, the divorce document probably needs to be more than 36, or you got to do something a little.
Yeah. You got to do something right kind there. Of creative. So I have to set this up and talk to the attorney as well as maybe the financial advisor and say, okay, is this an option? Because in order for this person to keep the marital home and to pay out their spouse, maybe that's part of their agreement, that they're going to do an equity buyout and buy out their spouse. And that other person is kind of waiting on that money to do whatever they're going to do. All the pieces have to kind of come together. So it makes for a much more successful divorce. I mean, if there's such a thing, there is,
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, there's definitely a right. You might be facing something perhaps you didn't want to face necessarily.
Right.
But right. There's still, let's just say, six different ways to approach it. And, right. You know, meaning with different levels of like, this is a better resolution than a.
Right. Yeah.
There's a line from some right. movie I like to pull out once in a while in my family law practice, you know, like what's your best bad option or something, you know, there's still a best bad option or a best mediocre option. You
right.
know,
there's
the worst bad. And then there's the best bad and they're not the same. I'm smiling, but right. There's a big deviation of like options.
Yeah. And in order to feel like it's successful, you know, what you went into it and agreed to and signed on needs to be able to be carried out. And that's really where the disconnect is there, is you have to make sure that what you're agreeing to can be carried out. I had a client just recently that is going out and buying another home. She's getting out of the marital home, but the spouse is the one that's going to buy her out. Well, she has to know that he can accomplish that.
Right.
In order for her to buy this house that she wants to buy. If he can't accomplish that and get out the $100,000 out of their marital home that he's going to pay her, it's going to be a trickle down effect. She's not going to end up being able to buy the house that she thinks she can buy. So,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I'm just thinking out loud a little bit about a newish client, new consultation I dealt with recently. And I like sometimes to make the property settlement disproportionate in lieu of maintenance, because sometimes that gives a client the closure. And now, right, I'm not waiting for this monthly stream of income.
Yep. Yeah.
And if that pot's big enough, it's still good, but it also, right, it might work counter to the idea of getting approved for a mortgage because you don't have the income stream. So I'm just
100%, Peter. That so, is such a week.
Maybe
we
I'm talking
seeing,
my, yeah.
No, we're seeing a lot of lump sum distributions where people mm-hmm. do not want to be reliant on an income stream and waiting for that check to be written every month. So there is a lot of settlements where the other spouse is getting a lump sum of money, but guess what? They have a big lump of money, but they have no income. So they
right,
have a fat,
exactly.
fat bank account, but no income. So if you bring in a certified divorce lending professional, we can look at those lump sums, and there's ways we can take that and create an income stream out of it that I can use for qualifying purposes, but I need all parties to kind of be on board so that it can be put into the settlement agreement so that we can carry that out as part of an income stream.
Interesting. Yeah. That was real time. That was like a new consult about a week ago. And
yeah,
I think the person we're hypothetically going to represent probably is not the one who wants to get a home, but no, again, right. Right. That's good information. Cause right. I always, you know, if our law firm rule number one is communicate a lot, our law firm rule number two oftentimes is to finish cases fastly and expeditiously. And I think another like caveat is just like, a lot of times I feel like clients want closure.
Yeah.
And sometimes, right. Getting a lump sum gives you closure, but I guess it hurts your ability to buy, you know.
Well, it may or may not. If you, at least if you have the information and you can set it up appropriately with that lump sum, and it's not, you're just not sticking it in a bank account somewhere, there are ways you could put it in a trust or a revocable trust to where you can create an income stream for yourself to where maybe you do just want to take a year and rent and not worry about real estate for a little while. But then your plan is for your future, like after that year, then I'm going to think about buying. Well, you still need to be set up for success, right? But if you don't have the information, then you don't know. So it's best to kind of be like, okay, this is my plan post-divorce, but what's my five-year plan? What's, you know, what's that look like? And even keeping the marital home sometimes, you know, people say, I'm going to keep the marital home until my kids get out of high school or something like that. Maybe that's 2 years. What does that look like? Well, if you're taking on the marital home and you're going to be increasing your mortgage payment, and then you're going to be taking on the sale of that home, there's cost to selling real estate, right?
Sure.
You're also taking on the costs of the sale, rather than if you did it before the settlement or during the settlement, you'd be sharing in those costs. If you say, I'm keeping the house, and then you keep it for 2 years and then you sell the house, all those costs are on you. And people were like, oh, I didn't think of that. And it's not just a couple of $100, you know, it's kind of significant. Yeah. So
one of your bullets, and I think I know where you want to go with this, but I'm going to let you take us there. Lots of people don't know what an equity buyout entails. And let me ask you this, because there's important language, isn't there, Tammy, that allows somebody to basically get full equity out of a home versus maybe 80%. Am I butchering the concept or
you
what am I talking
spot
about?
Spot on. You are so good at this. I think you could, you've given a lot of really good advice as far as from an attorney perspective. A lot of attorneys don't know this stuff. So that's great. Yes. If it's written in your set, so, and first of all, equity, I think, is a term that some people don't know what equity is. Mm-hmm. And equity is you take the valuation of the home and you subtract out the mortgage. So let's give some numbers. Let's say the home is worth $500,000 and you have a $200,000 mortgage. You have $300,000 worth of equity, right?
Yes.
That's an asset. The difference between those two numbers is an asset of $300,000. So if it's a marital home, then you know you get $150,000, your spouse gets $150,000, right? Technically.
Right.
So what happens with an equity buyout, if it's being done through the home, through the equity in the home, what happens if one person is being removed from that mortgage? Is the person that's keeping the home takes on the $200,000 mortgage, plus they're going to pay out their spouse for their portion of the $150,000. So their new mortgage is going to be for $350,000 on the home. Now, if it's spelled out specifically in the settlement agreement, then a conventional loan will consider that what's called a rate and term refinance. And that's what you're talking about, Peter. There's a difference between a rate and term refinance and a cash out refinance. If you just go to a mortgage company and say, I want $150,000 out of my home, and you have that kind of equity, you're capped out at 80%. You cannot get more than 80% of the value of the home. If it's court ordered and spelled out in a settlement agreement that you're going to be paying out your spouse that $150,000, then it can be considered a rate and term refinance, meaning we're just refinancing the current mortgage, paying out the money to the spouse. And all that does for you, it gives you ability to access more of the equity and it gives you the best terms in the market, the best rates possible for your credit situation and the loan to value and all that. So it puts you in a better situation if it's spelled out specifically in a settlement agreement.
Is that limited to divorcing couples per court order, or how?
No, it could be any kind of partnership. It could be a partnership on it. I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Well, I'm just trying to get at let's keep it in the divorce box. I don't want to go too far afield, but so pursuant to a divorce in a judgment paying a former spouse, if it's handled properly, right? I, as a lawyer, should be able to have my clients, you know, get in that cash out refinance box versus
no, you want an opposite. You want them to be in the rate and term box, not the cash out box. right? The rate.
I want them in the rate and term box.
You want them in the rate and term box. And the more specific you are in the settlement, the more the language is specific to that transaction and you don't lump it together. You can't say they're going to, you know, pay out $150,000 of equity, plus they're going to pay off this credit card and that credit card and do all these things together, and you lump all that stuff together, it changes the dynamics of the mortgage altogether. So you want it just to be just for the equity of the home spelled out specifically. And if there's other things being paid out or paid off,
yes,
out of the home, then it's going to be considered a cash out. It can only be just for the equity portion to the spouse.
That's new information to me too then. Okay. Cause I knew about the 80 and the 100 situation and the difference, but okay. So now we're paying off 3 credit cards. That's a problem.
Well, it might be right. It might just be, it might be the situation that they needed to be, right? I mean, there might not be any money doing it otherwise, and we might have to structure it that way, but at least they know. And at least we have kind of calculated what those numbers need to look like. But yes, if there's the ability to pay those maybe somewhere else or do something else, that's what a divorce mortgage plan, I would put that all in a document to them and say, okay, this is what it looks like if you do this, that, or the other thing.
Your last bullet, Tammy, a big topic right now is the idea of assuming a mortgage. Can somebody actually do that?
Well, you know,
I just signed up for a webinar from your organization on that very topic.
Oh, good.
I'm going to learn more in 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah. I'm glad you're going to be on it. That's great. So yes, it is. So it's typically a government-backed loan, an FHA, VA, or USDA are the three types of loans that could potentially be assumable. It is a very arduous process. You still have to qualify.
Okay.
It's not just like, I'm going to assume it. And so it just gets moved over to the other person, which I think is a lot of people think like, can I assume it? Like just take over my 3% mortgage and push my spouse off the loan.
Right.
No. And most people, I'd say, I don't know what the statistics or numbers are, but I would say most people have a conventional loan.
Right.
There's, you know, a smaller percentage of people that have FHA or government loans. So conventional loans are not assumable. They would have to talk to their servicer. So specifically, if you have a situation where you have a timing thing, right? We're talking about timing of the settlement agreement and saying you're going to remove the spouse in a certain amount of time and blah, blah, blah. Assuming it, I've heard nightmare stories of, people thinking that their mortgage is assumable, going into it, thinking that's going to happen. And then that is not at all, they don't have the ability to do it. And it really tracks their whole process. So.
Interesting. So in a sense, it's a fairly narrow exception or possibly.
Very small box.
Not that. Have I not heard stories of people when their loan has gotten really tiny, even in a more conventional mortgage, even in that situation, like, hey, I have a $500,000 house and my mortgage is down to $30,000. Is there any grace even in that situation? I feel like I've heard people when they have a really tiny mortgage, like they can just take it over. Or maybe it's just because it's so small. It's
they might
so easy to qualify or.
Yeah, you could just qualify to refinance it. I have Christmas lights on the outside of my house and they're like at the windows. I'm sorry. I keep looking.
If there's a fire, we'll pause the podcast.
My dogs are going crazy. I'm sorry if you hear them, but yeah. So they do need to refinance in order to remove the spouse. It needs to have a refinance. So not an assumption, more than likely.
Here, due to pet troubles and because we're getting near the bewitching hour anyways, let's try to land this plane. Here, Tammy, here's just like what a quick bullet point as somebody Your best piece of advice for a person facing or in the midst of divorce, and conversely, biggest mistakes you see, or maybe just one of each. You have an answer?
Facing a divorce is surround yourself with a good team. Don't rely on your divorce attorney to have all the answers for everything. You know, surround yourself with people that can help support your attorney and make good financial decisions for you and put it in the settlement agreement that can be carried out. And I would say on the opposite, not surrounding yourself and having your attorney as your therapist, your financial advisor, your mortgage professional is not a good idea. Your job is to help get them through the legal process, and relying on you, I would think, right, would make for a much more expensive divorce for them as well. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, as a divorce attorney, right, you develop some skill set and some knowledge, and hopefully I'm continuing to grow in that area. And I'd say even, you know, the financial professionals like yourself, of course, feel like even maybe even more so, and I mean, we don't have to rank them, but just the idea of just having like a community, right? A community of people.
Yeah.
I feel that emotional, you know, right? There's like a loneliness epidemic in the world, I think is true, especially with men. And, you know, you're going through a divorce. I feel like, you know, you get that isolation. I mean, very, very candidly, it can be a sad, trying, you know, right? I mean, suicide numbers in the United States are terrible.
Terrible. So surround yourself with people that understand what you're going through and can help guide you. One thing I do want to point out, Peter, this is a kind of a big thing for you and for your clients or your listeners, is a certified divorce lending professional. We do not charge for our services. And here's the reason we do not, because of the Equal Credit Opportunity Act. It could be considered disparate treatment under that act. If I were to charge a divorcing client, marital status first is a protected class. So if I was to charge a divorcing client a consultative fee and not charge a first-time home buyer, that could be considered disparate treatment. So my services are complimentary, are free. Right. I work with a divorce team and I help make a more successful divorce. And, you know, at the end of the day, we've worked together for some time. I would just hope to be considered if there is a transaction at the end of the day. But that's important because a lot of people are concerned about, you know, it's already an expensive process for them. Right. So
that's awesome to know. So you have this extra expertise and skill set that the generic mortgage lender doesn't have. And is this true? And I am really trying to land the plane here.
Yeah.
But you still really have access to all the lending options, right? That Mr. Chase Bank or something has, right?
I'm so still a mortgage lender at the end of the day.
Yeah. So that's cool. So it's like, it really is. There's no downside to using you if somebody's in a divorce situation.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Tammy, thanks again for your time and expertise. I've enjoyed learning more. So who is your ideal client and where can people find you?
So people can find me at my website, which is takeorleavethehouse.com. You can schedule a complimentary consultation there. You know, my calendar's there. You know, you learn about me. All my social media is on there, takeorleavethehouse.com. And my ideal client would be anybody that's thinking about divorce. Unfortunately, you know, I'm there to help. And, you know, it can't be too early in the process. If there's a marital home involved, or if there's contemplation about buying a new home while you're going through that process, I'm a great person and a good person to talk to about that.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for your time, Tammy, and impressed with the domain, takeorleavethehouse.com. check out Tammy, and I'm going to butcher the last name, Walensak.
You got it.
All right. Thanks, Tammy.
Thanks, Peter.